sure what your options would be, but...
So I will call a February 5th, 2025 meeting of the Transportation Commission to order. Ariana, if you'd like to read the instructions.
Sure. Welcome to our virtual meeting. We're going to cover a few basic items before beginning. If you lose connection at any point during the meeting, you can reconnect by clicking the link or calling the number in your original email. To members and city staff, members, if you are able, please activate your video and keep it on for the duration of the meeting. Staff, if you are able, please activate your video when you are speaking. Use the raise hand feature when you would like to be recognized to speak or ask questions. Staff, click raise hand when you're asked a question. The chair will do their best to call on committee members in the order in which hands are raised. Lowering your hand will take you out of the queue. Members of the public who have registered to speak, the name you entered in Zoom must match the name you entered in registration. You will remain muted until called upon. The clerk will tell you when your time is up. After speaking, a member of the body may ask you a question. If you need to share documentation with the commission, please send it to the email listed on today's agenda. Chair, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Ariana. Aiden, if you could call a roll, please.
Sure. Juliana Bennett might be excused for tonight due to the other meeting. MGR Govindarajan. Dina Nina Martinez Rutherford.
Present.
Barbara Harrington McKinney. Oh, I don't see. Ann Kovich.
Here.
Robbie Weber.
Here.
Denise Jess. I don't see.
Pepe. Yeah, it's unusual that we haven't heard from Denise. Maybe she's having technical issues or something.
Pepe Barros is excused for tonight. Chris McCahill.
Here.
Bill Bremer.
Here.
Harold Gleams.
Here.
Kaylee Jameson.
Here.
And Lynn Olson.
Here.
Okay. Everybody, let's see, since we're missing three people, both Kaylee and Lynn would be able to make motions and vote. Alder Martinez Rutherford.
Thank you. I was going to ask how good we are on quorum in case I need to pop off around a little bit later in the meeting, just so.
At this point, we have 8 and we need 6 for quorum.
Okay.
So if you could just check in before you leave, because sometimes we do have other people coming and going. So.
Will do. Thank
okay.
you.
No, thank you for checking. Appreciate it. Okay. Everybody have a chance to look at the minutes from the last meeting. Harold.
Move approval of the minute.
Bill.
I second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Okay, I'm going to assume a unanimous consent vote unless anybody wishes to vote no or abstain. I don't see any hands, so the motion is carried unanimously. Okay, we had a number of emails that were saved under item one, and I understand we do have somebody registered to speak under item number one, which is public comment for items not on tonight's agenda. Is that correct, Aiden?
That is correct, yep.
Okay.
We have Sarah Olson of South Midvale Boulevard opposes and wishes to speak.
Okay, go ahead, Sarah. It's just so you know, Midvale Boulevard was pulled from the agenda tonight, so it will likely be on a future agenda, but it is not on the agenda tonight. But you're certainly welcome to let us know your thoughts under this item number one.
Well, would the commission like to hear my comment, or should I save it for the week when it is on the agenda?
Absolutely. You're welcome to tell us this evening, and you're welcome to come back and tell us again when it is on the agenda.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I very much appreciate that. I just wanted to raise my concern that the plan for Midvale Boulevard seems to be creating a conflict between bikers and the residents and drivers on that road that doesn't actually exist. at the city's informational meeting last week or the week before, you know, the city wasn't able to, fortunately, there hadn't been any recorded bike accidents on Midvale, and the city hadn't, you know, didn't have any counts for how many bikers are currently using Midvale, so they didn't really have any evidence that there's demand for bike facilities on Midvale. Residents who called into the meeting also weren't reporting that they were seeing very many bikers. And the city said their philosophy was, you know, if you build it, they will come. And I'm concerned that that would attract bikers into a dangerous situation when there are safer alternatives available. The city said that they didn't think that the Midvale project would lower speeds of traffic. And of course, Midvale has a lot of ambulance traffic that, you know, wouldn't be lowering its speeds and shouldn't be lowering its speeds at any rate. And so it just doesn't seem like there's the need to have additional bike facilities on Midvale, especially because there's already bike lanes on Sego, a couple blocks to the west, and then a couple blocks to the east, bikers could use Owen and Blackhawk or one of the other through side streets that are much more low traffic. And both of those alternatives are very close to Midvale and wouldn't be encouraging bikers to be on a high traffic and high speed road. So it just seems like the plan is creating a conflict between bikers and the residents that, you know, wouldn't need to exist. The residents would be burdened by the loss of parking, but there wouldn't be a concrete benefit to bikers that they don't already have now. And then the final point I wanted to make was the city had mentioned that they might be doing an assessment on the residents for the project. And I think that, you know, everyone on the street would be very much opposed to that, and it really wouldn't be fair because the city said that there's over 23,000 vehicles per day using Midvale. Obviously, that's not all the residents. The residents weren't the ones that caused wear and tear on the road, and, you know, they're not the reason why the city is doing the project. The city is obviously doing the project just to create a general benefit for commuters using the road. So it wouldn't be equitable or lawful to make the owners contribute to the cost of the project when it's just a general project that benefits the public. So thank you for hearing my comments.
Yeah, no problem. We're always interested in hearing from the public. I just wanted to make sure everybody realized that it was going to be on the agenda. And then at the very last minute, staff decided that it would be better to wait to hear to absorb and be able to respond to all the feedback that they got at the public information meeting on January 30th. So does anybody have a comment or a question for, Denise is in the attendees. Could you please move her over, Ariana, to the panelists?
Yep, can do that.
Thank you. And we're still good for, we still have two people missing, I believe. So we're still good for Kaylee and Lynn to vote. So in any event, it's great to get this feedback, and we're always interested, and we'll certainly look to hear more once the plans are further developed with regard to Midvale. So does anybody have any comments for or questions for the registrant?
I'd like to say thank you for your comments.
Okay. Thanks, Lynn. We always appreciate hearing from the public. And it doesn't hurt to remember to say that. Thank you. Anybody else have any comments or questions for the registrant? Okay, thanks very much for coming. And you're welcome to come back again, certainly, when the item is on the agenda. Are there any disclosures or recusals this evening? Okay, seeing none. We have two items proposed for the consent agenda. Aiden, I don't think we do, but do we have anybody who is registered to speak on either item 2 or 3?
We do not, no.
Okay. Does anyone wish to have item 2 or 3 separated from the consent agenda? Okay, seeing no hands. We have item 2, Legistar 86835, with regard to engineering services contract regarding safe routes to school planning project. And item 386814 related to vacating and discontinuing portions of Braxton Place Public Street right-of-way within the Triangle Plat. Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda? Phil?
Make a motion to accept the consent agenda for items okay. 2 and 3.
Okay, so there's a motion to approve items 2 and 3 on the consent agenda. Alder Martinez Rutherford?
I will second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Okay. I'm going to assume a unanimous consent vote unless anybody wishes to vote no or abstain. Okay, I'm seeing no hands. So the consent agenda is passed with a unanimous vote. All right. Item number 4, we had to defer the third quarter traffic safety report because we just had so much going on. And so Lieutenant Hannah was gracious enough to do both quarter 3 and quarter 4 this evening. I look forward to hearing about them. And thanks so much for all the work, Lieutenant Hannah, that you put into it. And we'll look forward to hearing your report. Thanks.
Can you hear me okay?
We can, yes.
Excellent. I just want to thank all of you for accommodating my schedule. I was in Australia and that led to some timing issues. So thank you so much. I'm sorry that third quarter is delayed, but I appreciate that immensely. I'm not going to go too deeply into the third quarter report other than to talk about the fatalities that happened in the third quarter. That doesn't mean that you can't ask me questions, but I'll start there. The rest of the stuff is pretty straightforward, as you've seen from other quarterly reports. So I will try to share this. Can everyone see that?
Yes.
All right, let me... Well, you'll have to see the side too, I guess. So in the third quarter, there were 3 traffic-related fatalities. When I say traffic-related, it doesn't mean that the incident itself was the fault of the driver. It just means it happened on a road and it involved a vehicle, and you'll see why that's important in one of the incidents, maybe in this quarter or the next quarter. So the first third quarter fatality occurred on July 1st. That's a Monday. Happened at 9:10 a.m. on the Beltline. It was westbound Beltline. Traffic was stopped and backed up because people were exiting onto Midvale Boulevard. The suspect, unit number 1, was traveling westbound, as were the other drivers. That driver admitted that she briefly looked down at her phone. And while she was distracted, her vehicle collided with unit number two, which in turn collided with number 3. The driver of unit 2 was initially conscious and alert at the scene and then suddenly went pulseless, non-breathing. She was transported to the hospital where she was pronounced deceased, unfortunately. The tox reports, no alcohol, but I think we're still pending on the drug reports. So I don't have anything to report that in that right now. But as far as the conditions of the road and the environment, it was dry, it was daylight. They were all going straight on the Beltline. The weather conditions were clear. I won't go into all of the details here. Each car had one occupant. You can see the cars that they were all in. The suspect was 16 years old. Unfortunately, she sustained a minor injury and her airbags deployed. But again, no ethanol or drugs detected at the time. I think we're still waiting on tox screen, but her actions obviously were inattentive driving and she was traveling at a high rate of speed. The victim, the female who was deceased, was a 77-year-old white female. Obviously, she was just stopped in traffic when she was struck from behind. And finally, the third vehicle involved in this incident belonged to a 23-year-old white male. He also was stopped in traffic, and again, he was struck from behind from Unit 2 after Unit 2 got struck by Unit 1. The second third quarter fatal crash occurred at Packers Avenue and Tennyson Lane on July 4th at 4:30 a.m. The vehicle that was involved was traveling northbound on Packers Avenue between Bunting Lane and Tennyson Lane. That vehicle was stolen and being operated at a high rate of speed. The driver lost control, struck a no parking sign, and then struck a tree. It was the backseat passenger that was actually pronounced deceased at the scene. The driver and the front passenger ran from the vehicle. They were later located and arrested. That night, it was dry, obviously dark in the morning of, it was 4:30 a.m., so it was pretty dark, but there were some lights over there. Roadway was straight, weather conditions clear. And the suspect was the driver, obviously the 20-year-old Black female. She sustained a minor injury. There were tests given and THC was detected, but no alcohol. And again, she was traveling too fast when she lost control of that vehicle. And her passenger, or front passenger, was a 23-year-old Black male. He suffered a minor injury. He was also had THC on board, but again, no alcohol. And finally, the victim of this crash was an 18-year-old Black male. He was in the back seat, so obviously no airbag. We don't believe he had his seatbelt on or anything. And we suspected drugs, and I believe that his test came back with THC present as well. And finally, the third fatal crash in the third quarter occurred on Saturday, September 21st, 3:41 p.m. Stoughton Road and Rita Road motorcycle. He went into the ditch. He was traveling southbound on North Stoughton Road at approximately 50 to 60 miles per hour. He failed to navigate the slight turn in the road and went into the ditch after losing control. He was pronounced deceased at the scene. It was a dry day, daylight. He was on a curve. The weather conditions were cloudy, but certainly were not a factor in this incident. He was a 64-year-old white male. The tests were given. There was no alcohol. I do have an update on this drug test. THC was present. And obviously his speeding and failure to be in control led to this incident. And at that point, that brought the fatal crashes in 2024 in the third quarter up to 7. Anyone have any questions about any of that? I know you've had a while to see these.
Bill, go ahead.
Lieutenant, I think we've talked about this before, but the question is, because I work at the TOPS lab, and one of the things we do is using the crash data, is when you get a return from the crime lab on drug and alcohol, particularly in fatals, do you go back and insert that into the crash report that it was... those drugs and alcohol were involved in those fatal crashes?
Yes, we do. Our traffic investigators who are in charge of investigating all fatal crashes go back and they update the MV4000 to indicate what really happened.
Right.
You know, that don't know, the MV4000 at the time is the information that we have at the moment.
Right. I think that's good to get that, you know, because those records do. Is it just the fatals, or do you also go and look at if there's severe injury crashes?
You know, we don't.
Is it just the fatals that you really?
I'm in charge of the traffic investigators that really, if it's great bodily harm or a fatal accident, they investigate those. Otherwise, the other crashes I really don't know about. Yes. I'm assuming that they are asked by court services to update their MV4000 should something happen, but for the most part, it's you know, it's Rick and Brandon doing those reports and making them correct.
Okay, thank you.
Of course.
Thanks, Bill. Alder Martinez-Rutherford, go ahead.
Thank you. Lieutenant Hannah, I'm curious about the THC that's present in these individuals. When that's accounted for, is that impairment due to THC, or is that just that it's present in the blood system?
It's just that it's present. We use that as a factor that might be a reason for the cause of the crash. It's pretty typical that they will do a blood test on at least the suspect and sometimes the victim. In this case, again, I can't say that it was the cause, but it may have been a factor.
I'm just curious, just because I know it stays in the bloodstream yep. for a while. And
well, that's exactly correct.
The thing I'm really curious about is how we're substantiating the impairment factor with it and not just, oh, it was there in the system. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for this one, you know, obviously it's not a criminal investigation because it was just the motorcycle driver involved. If it was somebody else, obviously the investigators would look a little bit closer as to when that person may have consumed or smoked or whatever it is, the illegal substance. So we try to figure that out based on the information given by the suspect, if they give that information, and then information from medical professionals who can tell us, you know, if it was a substantial amount or maybe when it was ingested. You know, that stuff gets a little bit hard to determine with some of those drugs, quite frankly. So that's why we list it as just a factor to consider. Certainly not blaming it on the THC, but it was present, and that's what we have to acknowledge.
Thank you very much for that clarification.
Of course.
Okay, anybody else have any comments or questions at this point? Okay.
Goodness, you're all taking it easy on me tonight. I appreciate that. let me pull up the fourth quarter here. Can you all see that?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. Let me just get to the important part again. I'll let you look at the other stuff. And you can tell me, you've had it for a while, so I hope if you have any questions, please bring them up to me. But again, we'll just talk about the fatal crashes for the fourth quarter. And again, important to remember, it's traffic related, road related, vehicle related, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it was the fault of the driver. It's just the circumstance that occurred. So there were two traffic related fatalities in the fourth quarter. The first one occurred at Stoughton Road at Highway 30. This was a motor vehicle versus a motor vehicle versus a motor vehicle. The two victim vehicles were on the Highway 30 exit ramp to Stoughton Road. They had a green light and were proceeding through that light to take a left turn onto southbound Stoughton Road. So hopefully you can all picture that. The suspect vehicle was traveling northbound on Stoughton Road. He drove through the red light, struck both vehicles. One victim was pronounced deceased at the scene, and the other victim was treated and released. The suspect was taken to the hospital with minor injuries, which were not life-threatening. So again, the conditions were revolving around that crash. It was dry. It was dark at that time of the morning. I believe the two victims were heading to work. Obviously, the environment was no factor in this. The roadway did not play a factor. The weather was clear. Each of the vehicles had just one occupant. The suspect was a 35-year-old white male. Again, he had minor injuries, but he was held at the hospital for 2 days for observation. We suspected drugs. Tests were given. I do not have the update on that yet. Actually, I'll take that back. I believe the alcohol test came back at a 0.228, if I'm remembering correctly. And yes, that's it. So he was heavily intoxicated. He had been working at a bar. He's a bartender at a bar that I don't know the name of. So I can't answer that question if you have that. And was coming home or driving home clearly quite intoxicated from his job. The victim that was deceased at the scene was a 37-year-old white male. He, again, was just going to work and was taking a left turn from Highway 30 onto southbound Stoughton Road. And the third victim was the 48-year-old Hispanic male with minor injuries treated at the scene and released. And the final fatal crash of the year occurred on Monday, the 9th of December at 6:58 p.m. This was a motor vehicle versus a pedestrian, and it occurred on the Beltline. And this is the incident that I'm referring to when I say that it's traffic related, but this certainly was not the fault of the of any driver on the Beltline. I want to make that clear. This individual, the pedestrian, jumped from the concrete divider that was next to the flex lane. He jumped, was standing in the flex lane, and then he jumped over the barrier. He was reported to be bundled up in a bunch of blankets. He was facing towards the other side of the Beltline, looking like he had the intent to cross the Beltline. And he actually was struck by a vehicle as he ran across the roadway. And that vehicle was traveling at speed, which was at least 55 miles per hour. So a tragic incident that unfortunately the driver will have to think about forever. It's just one of those things, I guess. It was dry, it was dark, but the weather conditions were clear. There were two occupants in vehicle number two, which was the vehicle that struck him, struck the individual, the pedestrian. Unit number three was damaged because it actually crashed into unit number two after that incident, and there were four people in that car. The deceased individual was a 23-year-old American Indian or Alaskan Native. Again, tests given, pending results. I don't know the results of this one, but the action, his sudden movement into traffic was what caused this crash. The driver that unfortunately struck the pedestrian was a 45-year-old Hispanic male. He did not have injuries, airbags, seatbelt, all deployed and used. Not suspected that he was using drugs or alcohol. That's all we know about him. That's all I know about him. And the other car, again, it was just damaged because of the final crash. I don't have the information on that individual.
Looks like Bill has a question for you, Jen.
Go ahead.
Thanks. These kinds of crashes, this last one, it always brings up the possibility of what is the mental state of the individual. On these kind of cases, do you try or do any background at all to see if it's a potential suicide?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I believe that there was, he was with somebody that night who was near the Beltline as well. Without going into too much detail, they did get a statement from that individual, and there were some not only possible drug factors involved in this incident, but also some mental health issues. But we do a full report an investigation to figure out, you know, what exactly happened here.
Sure,
what was the state of mind of the individual and all of that.
It's very, very unfortunate. And the driver that struck the individual was the one that's going to, you know, live with it the rest of their lives. But
absolutely.
I know in our records, sometimes I don't know if suicide is determined by I think the medical examiner has to make that call. If they make the call that it was, does the crash get removed as a motor vehicle?
It does get removed as a traffic fatality.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
If that is determined, and again,
Brandon, I know it's tough. I know it's tough, and the medical examiner has to be involved.
So, yes.
Yeah, or a coroner.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, all the factors here seem to point in that direction. Yeah. And obviously Brandon and Rick would do an amendment to that MB-4000 and indicate what the factors were that caused this.
Yep. Okay. Thank you.
Of course. Anyone else?
Any other comments on the fatal crashes that Jen described? Or any other comments or questions about the rest of the reports? Bill?
Yeah, I have a on the rest of the reports, and it isn't just one particular quarter or not. Lieutenant, do you think it would be worthwhile? I don't want to say curious, but I'm interested in that we look at our test officers, and we're getting, and I suspect we're getting a lot of citations from those, from that work. Have you looked at any, I don't necessarily want to see it every time or anything like that, but just a sample of a quarter or something. How many of the citations, let's say speed citations, were for the quarter were issued by the test officers versus other officers that are on patrol?
Yeah, I actually have that information, and that would not be a problem for me to include that in the report if you're interested.
Yeah, I think it's good because I'm kind of interested as to what the officers, you know, their schedules and their, you know, they're always, a lot of them are on call, or they're call after call after call.
Yes.
But when it is available, and can they do enforcement? And I think that's what the commission is interested in is, you know, how much work can they devote to speed, let's say, or traffic enforcement on their is not part of a test unit.
Correct. I wish that they could dedicate a little more time. Obviously, traffic complaints are probably the number one complaint that we get at the Madison Police Department. Unfortunately, because our patrol officers, like you said, are call to call, so call driven, they don't have a lot of discretionary time to do traffic enforcement. Though when they do, there are several that that really enjoy it and do focus their time on that. The bulk of the citations are obviously coming from our test team, just because that's their job. And then all of them are running the grants that we run. The grants consist of 4 to 5 people and a lead officer, which is normally a test officer who's running the laser.
I guess I would be interested in knowing whether it's 50% or 75% or whatever, you know, where the citation's coming from.
Yeah, absolutely. I can add that in the next report for you.
Okay, thank you.
Of course.
Thanks, Bill. Harold, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I also have a question about hazardous violations data. So I noticed that in 2024, after numbers have been pretty flat, they're really up this year. So I see like total hazardous are like 9,200 compared to 7,400. And most of that seems to be driven by the increase in speeding tickets, like going up from 3,500 to like 5,100. Can you say a little bit about what's driving that increase? Do you have more capacity to do enforcement, or is it behavior change, or a little bit of both?
It really depends on, you look how it kind of fluctuates a little bit on each quarter, just because of the amount of grants that we are able to run. The grants have been very productive lately, and the officers, I'm going to tell you right now, Madison has a speed problem. I know that's nothing new to all of you, but we've got people flying in this town. In fact, the other night there was an OWI grant and they clocked a 16-year-old who was late for curfew at 107.
Oh.
107. And I wish that was more shocking to me, but we see such high speeds in the city that it's, I don't know what else to do. I know we're working on the 20 is plenty. I don't know how much of a factor that will be in some people's driving behaviors. For whatever reason, everybody seems like they're in a really big hurry. All of our grants are run as speed grants. And so that's usually the driving behavior of the speed is the reason for the stop. And then it leads to other things. Maybe they didn't have their seatbelt on, or maybe they were intoxicated, or maybe they had a, you know, a passenger who was not wearing their seatbelt because the driver is responsible for that, or an unrestrained child. Like, it just leads to other things. But we have, I wish I could figure out how to slow people down. It's just something we're seeing more and more. I wish I had the answer. I just don't. The grant information that you can probably see, you know, our officers are pulling people over, and I've mentioned this before, at speeds that are around 15 miles an hour over the speed limit. So we're not, it's not cheap tickets. This is egregious driving behavior in areas where there are bikers, there are pedestrians, other vehicles. You know, this kind of behavior is putting everyone at risk. So we are aware of it. We're doing the best we can. I wish I had more test officers, but that's a topic for another day. We're aware and we're trying to do the best we can with it. Does that answer your question? I know it's kind of a roundabout.
No, I mean, I think it answers my question. Like, yeah, I was really curious in the year over year change, because I know that, yeah, you can only do so much enforcement. And so part of what's reflected in the number is how much enforcement you can do, versus part of it is reflected in people's behavior. If nobody would speed, your numbers would go to zero. If you had zero enforcement, your numbers would go to zero. And obviously neither of those are the case. And so I just noticed the numbers for 2024 were quite a bit higher than for 2022 and 2023 for the whole year.
Yeah, I think we're just putting more attention to it. Obviously after COVID, you know, we've been ramping up ever since then. So you see the increase in numbers probably from 2020, where we didn't do very many, if any, traffic stops because of what was going on. But, you know, certainly it is something we are paying attention to. Speeding obviously is, you know, one of the highest factors in fatality crashes. So there's a lot of things going on here that we wish we could put a stop to, but we'll do the best we can with the resources we have.
Thank you very much.
Of course.
Thanks, Harold. Alder Harrington McKinney, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you very much for the report and the speeding across the city. You're absolutely correct. It is a problem. I think that happens to be the major complaint that residents in my district have. And the 20 is plenty. But I find myself on the Beltline after 10 o'clock, and literally it's a speed way. I mean, sometimes I have to pull over because people are just going so fast.
Yeah.
And I know this is just a comment because it's related to, you know, resources and how many, you know, officers that you can have. But because even when there are officers out there with the radar gun, I mean, they're still speeding because they can't be out there all the time.
Right.
Acknowledging the fact that speeding is a major problem. And if they're speeding that way on the Beltline, they're speeding through our communities as well. And our residents are really getting very, very upset about that. I would like to compare the figures with last year and this year. Am I able to find that in the document, or if you can direct me to get that? Because that was a great question. I'd like to look at the comparison from year to year to see where those increases are. That's the end of my comments. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah. You should be able to take a look at years previous. Just look at the hazardous tickets that we write. They're all broken down as to what they were written for, whether it was speed or red light violation or failure to yield. All of that will probably give you a pretty good idea of what we're looking at. And also, did you get my email today regarding McKenna?
You're muted, Alder. Alder, you're muted.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. No, I did not. I've been committed all day, but I will look for that because that is in the center of where our concerns are. So I definitely will look at that.
Perfect. And I want to use that as an example. Sometimes roadways in the city don't lend themselves to doing enforcement just because of the way they are curved, maybe. And I know what you're talking about by Elver there. And so Josh went out there, but again, it's hard to set up and get an actual speed and write that ticket that will stand up in court, if that makes sense. So some of these roadways, like the Beltline too, I mean, it is very, very hard with how much traffic is on the Beltline to adequately clock these folks who are speeding, first of all, and then second of all, trying to keep up to them with the speeds they're going at and the amount of vehicles that are on the Beltline. So some of these roads, we'd like to, we wish that we could do a little bit more, but please understand that the way some of these roads are laid out doesn't necessarily lend to some enforcement, some good enforcement.
Is that all you had then, Alder Harrington McKinney? Okay. Alder Martinez Rutherford, go ahead.
Yes, thank you again, Chair. Lieutenant Hannah, one more question. I'm curious if you have heard from other municipalities, either within the state or nationally, that have seen the same increases in speed. I'm just curious if it's like just Madison or if it is something that's really happening. And I know that since the pandemic, I've noticed that and red light running a lot more. So,
yes. I haven't talked to anybody recently, but if you look at numbers when everyone was dealing with COVID to now and how much it's increased since it was before, people just got into this habit of driving so fast because nobody was out there stopping them, right? And it was just kind of the Wild West, unfortunately. And people got into some bad habits that are unfortunately still continuing to this day. So I know that it is not just a phenomenon in Madison. There is research to back that up. But as far as what's happened since then, I mean, I haven't talked to any other agencies about what they're seeing, but I suspect that they're probably seeing stuff that's pretty similar to what we're experiencing.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, people are in a hurry. I don't know what the rush is.
Yeah, it's sad but true.
Yeah.
Lynn, go ahead.
Thank you, Officer, for your thorough report. This might be a question for the alders on the committee, but I would appreciate hearing anybody else's opinion. Have there been any ideas around passive measures like speed gates? Everybody's going through it. Whoever is speeding gets a ticket sent to their home. I mean, Illinois does it with the tolls. Maybe we need to find coverage. Maybe it's a federal program. I don't know, but can't stop being a visionary.
Thank you. I'll just say that it's interesting that you bring that up. I know a lot of people wish that we had speed cameras or red light cameras. That is not something that we have in Madison. That is not a tool that's available to us. So we have to just use the old fashioned way of using a laser and some cops to try to cut down on some stuff. So that's way above my pay grade and my position here at the department, whether speed cameras or red light signals. And Tom Lynch could probably speak more to this than I can.
Tom, we
don't have that available.
Yeah, if you want to maybe comment on that, Tom, and if you also have any comments about speeding in other areas of the country, because it seems like it's a problem nationally.
I'll give a very brief answer. It's a red light. Automated enforcement is illegal. In the state of Wisconsin. I think communities within Wisconsin are trying to get some pilot programs going. Milwaukee has asked for a pilot red light running twice in the two most recent budgets, and it's been taken out. Mm-hmm. And so we're probably going to pursue the red light running first before the automated enforcement. So it will be a journey before we're able to use those tools.
Anything, Tom, with regard to speeding elsewhere? I know we had lots of studies done during COVID and right post-COVID. I'm guessing this is a problem everywhere.
Yeah, you know, I can't really comment on that. I'm in the midst of doing my annual report where I check into all this research, and I haven't got to that
Okay, well, maybe we can talk about that at a future meeting, because I think it's, I mean, we hear that all the time, and every time we're looking at geometrics for reconstructions, we're interested in slowing people down and, you know, helping create traffic safety improvements that will physically slow vehicles down.
There was a 16-year-old driver clocked at doing 107 miles an hour the other night.
Yeah.
Someplace.
Video renders.
Not sure where that's coming.
Navigate and press tab for more options.
Denise, your microphone is on.
Thank you.
Of course.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. So I think it's something that is high on our agenda every time we have an opportunity to help do something about reducing speed on a street or improving traffic safety. And we'll certainly keep that in mind. And I don't want to make work for anybody, but I'm just curious. And I know Yang's not here this evening, but, you know, Tom Moore or Tom Lynch, you know, there are lots of interesting data in these speed test summaries and in your grant summaries that show trends in certain parts of the city with regard to high speed. And I know we've looked at that on East Washington, for example. I'll use that because I think it's the best. And I know we've made a lot of changes on East Washington because of the high speeds. So I'm assuming, Tom, that we look at that, you know, you and the folks in the police department and Jen's department or elsewhere are looking at these results where people are going 104 miles an hour or whatever, or where the city has control, because I know, you know, there's certain roads where the Wisconsin Department of Transportation is involved as well. So I'm sure that's something that you're looking at. Is that right, Tom?
Yeah, that's right. And you're right. You know, there's certain things we can do on certain streets. Some things requires more going through the state. But it kind of gets back to like the driver comfort versus speed. A lot of these with the really high speeds are the arterials and emergency vehicle routes. So yeah, on some of these, it's kind of difficult for us to do things that would really slow down traffic. But it is something that we look at. We try to address some of it with signal timing. But if, you know, if someone's not going to obey the signals, there's that possibility too. Kind of do know where the really high speed, the straightaway stretches between signals where people can really pick up high speeds. We're always looking for opportunities to do something, but yeah, a lot of times it's hard to find a project that'll, you know, if people are just going to completely disobey traffic laws and, signals, or it's tough to slow them down when we've got to keep it open for emergency routes and things like that.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, case in point, the person who ran the red light and caused the fatalities. So, you know, there was a traffic signal there and it was ignored. So, comments or questions? It's really disconcerting seeing some of that commentary and the really, really high speeds.
Well, and I'll just tell you that it's not just these major roadways that we all know about. Our Northeast CPT team just did a project on Portage Road. Posted speed limit is 25. They made 12 stops. I don't know how long they were out there. I don't think they were out there for very long. Oh, 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. 25 mile an hour speed limit, 12 stops, highest speed was 47, low speed was 38. So 13 over was the lowest speed they stopped. And there's just a stretch of road that, I mean, I haven't thought about Portage Road. I don't know about the rest of you. If it's not in your district, maybe if you're an alder, but you know, these things are happening everywhere, not just the main roads that we expect it on, but other places throughout the city.
Yeah. Well, it's a great reminder to us that we're on the right track, considering speed and how what we can do to help reduce speed where we can and where it's appropriate. As Tom said, certain roads have to be left open, and where they're emergency routes, they, you know, have to have clear sailing for emergency purposes. But it's always high on our agenda. Other comments or questions for Lieutenant Hannah? Really appreciate you taking the time to put all of this information in the reports. That I don't know about the rest of you, but I find it very enlightening to read the commentary on each of those traffic grants, because it's illuminating.
Yeah, I agree. That's why I decided to start putting those in there, because I think you get a pretty good flavor of, you know, a 4-hour block of time and what's occurring on some of these roads. And it really is mind-blowing, quite frankly.
Yep, it is. Other comments or questions for Lieutenant Hannah? Okay, thank you very much. We appreciate it. And we really appreciate the time that you spend putting this information together and coming to the commission to talk with us about it. So
not a problem. And if anyone has any questions, please feel free to give me a holler. I'm more than happy to go through some data with you and get you some more information if you need it.
Okay. Thanks so much, Lieutenant.
Thanks, everyone.
Okay. Next, we have agenda item 5, which is our reporting in from members who are also members of other boards, committees, and commissions. Anybody have anything to report this evening? Harold?
Just very briefly, from Board of Public Works last week, the sidewalk project along Nakoma Road, which I don't think actually we had at TC, but I can't quite remember. So there's a missing sidewalk on Nakoma Road. There's a school there. And so that was approved and it will be built. That's great. All I have.
Okay, thanks. Bill.
Thanks, Ian. Harold, I saw that and I paid attention to that on my most recent drive down Monroe. And that was it's going to be a significant improvement, I think, especially by Thoreau School. That is a lot of pedestrian activity there. And I think it's going to be a good project. That's going to connect, fill in a big pedestrian hole that we had connecting to get that on Monroe Street. Thanks for doing that, Harold. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Harold, and thanks, Bill. Anybody have anything else to report this evening? Okay, seeing no hands. Next, item 6 is announcements by the chair, and I actually don't have any announcements this evening, so that's going to go quick. In terms of future agenda items, we have a couple of referrals, potentially as many as 4 referrals from the Common Council this next time. Complete Green Streets update to the guide may be ready for the next meeting. And very possibly the Midvale project, as well as a public hearing potentially to remove residential permit parking from certain portions on Midvale, and some other public works review and feedback as well. Denise.
Yeah, thanks, Anne. I'm wondering if, and I can reach out to staff directly if this isn't an appropriate agenda item, but you know, a continued issue of concern is sidewalk closures during building construction. We've got 2 or 3 of them in my neighborhood, and I'm so in my work neighborhood that I'm so busy rerouting myself to find an accessible route. So I'd like to know a little bit about
what the ordinance is around that, you know, what's being worked out for, you know, for accessible passage when the construction bleeds out into the sidewalk. So, yeah, let me know if that's really something to take offline or if that's something we can bring forward for both the knowledge base of the commission and also any discussion.
Sure. We have pedestrian detours during construction projects on as a topic for a future agenda. But I can also look at maybe modifying that a little bit. Tom, did you have a comment about that?
Yeah, Denise, if there's something specific you want us to address, you can let me know. But otherwise, we can bring that as a topic to go over, you know, how we make these decisions with construction sites and what gets kept open, what we allow to close and detour.
Audio now and video running.
But yeah, a lot of these sites are just so tight and there's just no space for the contractor to work. So that's typically the reason, but there's a lot of back and forth between the city and the contractor to try to figure out what's the best way to get it constructed and what we can give up.
But I think it's a topic of great interest, Tom. So I think where we have an opportunity to talk about it, I think it would be good to hear about it because we've heard from Bill brought it up as well as you, Denise, and there was a lot of discussion and agreement that this is something that we would be interested in hearing about, better understanding the process. And perhaps how it works with ProAg as well.
Yeah, we can bring that as a future topic.
Yeah.
So. Tom Lynch, did you have something?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I had to step away to take a phone call. So this is being looked at also from engineering. Jim Wolf is looking at it as well as our permitting crew. There is, as Tom was saying, kind of a reality that if we are going to approve zero lot buildings, you know, right on the right of way, there'll probably have to be a staging area. But Bill has brought this up. Jim has brought this up. The mayor has brought it up. We are not in agreement internally yet on how to solve the problem, let alone with the mayor. So it could be a future topic, but there's a lot of people that are trying to understand it.
Okay. Well, it sounds like it's a work in process in terms of how the city is going to address it. So Denise, it's a great topic, and I'll work on some wording in terms of how we can flesh out what I put down there and maybe expand it a little bit. I'll send that to you, Denise, to see if it captures what you're talking about. And then we'll keep it it's at the top of the list right now of things that TC is interested in hearing about. So does that work, Denise?
That works great, Anne. Thank you. And yeah, Tom, I will reach out to you about the couple sites that I have particular concerns about, both because of their longevity of having the sidewalk closed. It's been a couple of years. So anyway, I'll reach out on the individual project, but I love that this is going to come forward to us as a group.
Okay. Sounds good.
Tom, did you have something else?
Yeah, I just wanted to give an update on Midvale. We met, city staff met internally today. And we posted an update to the website, but we will likely be bringing this in a few months. We had a public information meeting last week, and there was a lot of feedback from that meeting, and we want to have time to work on alternative options and collect the data and provide that feedback, compile all that. So we're likely looking at bringing it to TC late spring, hoping to get an approval for a project and then likely bidding it in the fall for a 2026 construction.
Okay, so not next meeting, huh?
It won't be next meeting. No.
Okay, all right. We've been hearing from a lot of people, and I know you heard a lot on the public information as well. So in terms of the future agenda, I'll move that further down the log. Denise, did you have something else? Okay. Anybody have any other future agenda topics?
I have a question.
Yes, Lynn?
I am admittedly new to this commission, and I am very grateful to be here. I want to know if perhaps I could be briefed, maybe not now, but later, on any plans to slow down Packers Avenue.
Tom Moore, is that something that you could maybe connect with Lynn on?
Sure. We can meet about that. You'd like to talk offline?
I'm just interested if it's been talked about, if it's in the pipeline, if it's ever going to come up on an agenda. It's horrible. It's like Froggerville. And I see a lot of students coming across Packers in Pennsylvania trying to get to East High School. And I'm an adult. I'm a blind adult. And I get across kind of okay. But I feel really bad for the students and others, especially at Commercial. But now 6th Street is untenable for drivers. It's such a blind curve coming from Quick Trip that it's a major concern for my neighbors as well as my family.
Are there any projects on Packers that are going to be coming soon, Tom?
Well, on the northern portion, it would be north-south BRT.
Sure.
The southern portion closer to First Street, I don't think there's anything planned. But this is something we could look into more with Safe Streets Madison for any Thank sort you. Of smaller project or crossing project. So I can put that on the list.
Okay. Thanks, Tom. Robbie, go ahead.
Actually, I put my hand down. I was just worried about discussing things that weren't on the agenda.
Right. We're really just trying to focus on things that can be put on agendas. And I think we may start talking about them a little bit too much, but we're going to try not to do too much of that.
Yeah. I'm just, you know, sort of reminding everyone that we can't.
Yep.
About things that aren't on the agenda. So
yeah, it's Aiden tries to do that on the agenda, where he says, wish a member suggestions for item on future agenda for information only, not for discussion. So it's hard to place that line and stay on the correct side of it. So all right, I made some notes on those things, and I think Tom Moore made some notes on them as well. Anybody have any other future agenda topics? Okay, I'm not seeing any hands. And we need a motion to adjourn. Harold.
So moved.
Okay. Alder Martinez Rutherford.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. I'm going to assume a unanimous consent vote. I don't think there's ever been anybody opposed to adjourning. So thanks, everybody. Have a great evening. Appreciate it.